Hi, welcome back. This is Let It Out. My name is Katie Delbout. This week, my dear friend of many years, so many years at this point, third appearance on this very podcast, Phoebe Lapine, chef, author. This is her fourth book that just came out that we speak about at length, actually, in this episode. I feel like often when anyone who's just written a book comes on, we either, you know, touch on it or I parse out bits that I love, but we usually cover more holistically the writer as the author and their history of how they got to where they are and all of that. But we've done that with Phoebe because she has been on the podcast two other times. And this time I really honed in on this new book that she wrote, which is a cookbook called Carbivore. And honestly, it fascinated me. It's been a minute since we spoke about wellness and eating and digestion and myths and how overthinking this sort of thing can be quite damaging. And it has been for me. And I say at some point in this podcast recording that Phoebe's the only person I would talk about this topic with, or one of very few people, if I'm being honest, because I never want things to teeter into an area that could be disordered eating-esque, or, you know, for me, I have to like be so careful about that because I'm so susceptible to it. So anyway, I think that this episode is safe, but we do talk about eating and carbs and how and when and perhaps why carbs became so demonized. And we get into the conversation around blood sugar stabilization and pop science and wellness information that has made that a real trend and or paying attention to that more available. I won't say it's a trend, but I see it everywhere. And we talk about perhaps why that is and how overthinking any of this stuff can be quite damaging and has been to us. And her first book touched on a topic that is really important to me. And if you've been listening to the show for a while, you know, but she talks about healthy hedonism. And she is a trained chef and has, you know, a close family friend of hers is Ina Garten. I don't think she'd mind me saying, because Ina wrote a incredible review of the book that is on the cover of the new book, Carbivore. And she comes from this, you know, really beautiful background with cooking and food and her relationship to food. And then because of something that happened with her health, she had a thyroid issue that she talks about in her memoir, her first book. She had to completely change her relationship to, in her career, really being a chef and learn to cook and eat in a different way, and how that affected her relationship with her now husband, Charlie, who's also wonderful. And I know it really created a interesting conversation that we get into here, where I realized that, you know, I was kind of all health and had to add in hedonism because I went so far in the direction of wellness and restriction that I needed to add in pleasure and joy to food again. And she was sort of coming to it from the other end, but we both met in the middle, and that's where we get to in this. So if you want to hear more about carbs and what it actually means for your blood sugar and food sequencing and digestion in a really gentle way that talks about how overthinking any of this stuff is more harm than good, and how stress is worse for us than anything you could eat, or how you eat it, or when you eat it, and sequence. And I hope you like our conversation. Phoebe still lives in New York City. She had a baby since she's last been on the show, which we don't even really get to talk to, but her baby is so cute. Not to brag, but I am on her close friends list, and I get to see the baby, and she also sends me photos. So I'm so grateful that Phoebe came over. She was in LA for her book tour. I got to go to her book party last night, and it was an honor and a privilege. And she came over the other morning, and we got to record in person in my apartment. And I'll send you a photo of that. And it was just so good to get to catch up with my friend. I cried last night leaving her at her party because I just I felt really moved about our friendship and how I've known her for so many years, and thought about, you know, she sends me job postings that, you know, she has been thinking of me on, or she, you know, when the pandemic was starting and it was, we were all warming up to it and all just kind of like talking about the wildness of it. I was here in LA and, but not meaning to, I didn't live here yet. All my stuff was in New York still. And so I remember talking to her, and it was raining, and I was just walking around voice texting Phoebe about like how scared I was and like, what should I do? Should I go back to Michigan? Should I stay here? Should I come to New York? Like, just chaotic. And Phoebe was so kind to me, and she sent me a gift card to this place called Kitchen Mouse, which is in the neighborhood and a restaurant that I love. And it was just such a simple thing, but it supported the restaurant during a really hard time. And it supported me. And that's like the type of thoughtfulness we're working with here. She's also an incredible writer and artist in so many different mediums. She's writing a screenplay, right? Actually, she wrote a screenplay, which we talk about, I think maybe in the last episode, but we also talk about, you know, wearing different hats creatively and vacillating between different elements of our work. And she's one of the best, truly. And if you want to know more about SIBO, she has a podcast called SIBO Made Simple. And if you don't know what SIBO is, you can figure it out there. I think we talked about it a little bit the last time she was on the show, because back then in 2021, she wrote a book called SIBO Made Simple, which was really well researched, and also a cookbook with incredible photos and recipes. And then again, the first book she came on the podcast for is called The Wellness Project. So anyway, I love Phoebe. I love you. Thank you so much for listening. It means so much to me. And I will talk to you at the end. I'm so happy you're here. I've been saying that for the first non-recorded private 15 minutes of you being here, but I was starting to say, this is your third appearance on this podcast,
which is crazy. And we didn't know each other at all the first time. I just like showed up at your door right after you moved to New York.
Yeah.
And it was a terrific introduction. We like got to have our first date on a recording.
I wish I would have listened back to that one or the other.
Yeah, you should have listened to that one.
I wanted to. I think it's so, it's so cringy.
I know.
To hear
I can't.
Yourself.
I can't.
And I'm sure I remember that day really well, because, like you said, it was the first day we met. I think connected us, Jess Carnan, our friend. And your second book had just come out. And I loved it. And I loved you on her podcast. And I was thinking about it. And it was like one of my first days in New York. Mm-hmm. And I was staying at this Airbnb in Brooklyn. You're the only person who came to that. And I think it was the first ever podcast I did in person.
Oh my gosh, that's funny.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. And we went on a walk.
We did.
It's so funny. I remember that day really well. And that's what, like 5 years ago.
Anyway. I feel like we got like CBD balls or something. You took me to a CBD like
I know where
latte
you took
place.
I took you get me to the end. It was the taste of the unicorn latte.
Yes.
I was very into
You're
that
very
at the
into
time.
The trends. I was like, oh my gosh, she's such a bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, nude New York person. And I'm a cynical, like old washed up hag who's like, ugh, unicorn lattes, sure.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I ended up being at that place when the Wall Street Journal was doing a piece on it, and I got interviewed as
gosh.
And so then the owners were like, oh my God, we're so happy it was you. So I become friends with the owners, and I ended up doing a live podcast there.
I remember that.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, life moves so fast.
So fast.
Here we are. And then you published another book about SIBO. After that, you started a podcast about SIBO.
Oh yeah.
And then you kind of have been on the show four times, because you were a guest for my Creative Underdogs.
Oh.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, of course. But that wasn't the show. That was just like a fun hang.
But I loved that so much. And like you are one of the most creative people that I know, because and the reason why I wanted to have you as a guest in that program in particular was because I think in our conversation about your last book, you talked about how you have to wear so many different hats to do what you do. And I'm sure that's only increased now, because your life has changed so much since then, even. Now you're mom.
Oh my God. Yes. And I'm really struggling with those hats right now. I ripped it off from a piece from somewhere that I can't remember, but I remember like the thesis so well and the theme, which is that we have three different hats as writers, as artists, and one is the artist, one is the editor, and one is the agent. And it's, I don't know if they said, you know, that it was hard to toggle between the three or just that they were like so distinct, but I have a really hard time toggling. And, you know, book launch is all agent all the time. It's my least favorite hat. And I really find I cannot just like put on the artist hat for a day when I'm just like inundated with the to-do list of launch and all the logistics.
So artist, agent, and what's the other one?
Editor.
Editor. Okay, so artist is obvious.
Yeah.
Editor is pretty obvious going back. And I always love in Sister Karina Kent's art rules, like there's the one that you don't edit and make at the same time. They're different processes. Mm-hmm. Like,
exactly. That makes sense to my brain.
And then agent, like that's just kind of expanding on that. But what does that, like, what is an agent? Like, what do you mean by, is it like, so it's
promotion,
PR and reaching out, it's planning events, it's asking for help, really.
Yes, which is, I think, the most cringy part of it for me personally.
Yeah. I mean, I think
like I'm good at the marketing part. I was like, my first job, like you, was in marketing. So that part I can do. And I feel like, exactly. And I feel like I always kind of have the marketing hat somewhere in the back of my brain, even when I'm writing and, or really like when I'm coming up with the proposal concept. I feel like the proposal concept is like, you're kind of writing like certain parts with your agent hat on.
Yeah. Cause there's like the promotional strategy.
Yeah, exactly.
And marketing analysis.
Exactly. And that part's fine. It's when it actually comes to like pitch emails and reaching out to friends and, you know, begging them.
Well, I think that's why, like, if you really get down to it, that's why agent and publicist exist as a job to do it for other people, because it's much easier. Like, I did it for a friend who hired me, as you know, to do it for her last year. And I didn't love having to ask friends for help, period, whether it was for her or for me. But I can so much more easily, like even this week, you're doing an event in LA and it's so easy for me to send out the link to people. And, and I've already sent it to two people and I'm like, it makes me happy if this is my friend's thing. But there's always a little bit of, if it's my thing, there's like, you come to the thing, it's okay, no problem, don't worry about
it. Oh, my toxic trait, truly. I had two different parties in New York because I was like, oh, I'll just like keep it easy. I'll do two smaller ones versus one bigger one. Mistake right off the bat, just for anyone wondering. Mistake. but then they were 4 days apart.
Oh my
and
God,
so
that sounds like something
I like didn't want, I was like so worried about inviting one person to both events and them feeling pressure to go to both that I like ended up inviting like no one to either.
Oh my God.
And then the week of was like sending those text messages like, ha ha ha, like, you know, sorry for the 11th hour invite. I'm having these two parties. Like,
I already feel, I mean, it's just, there's so, it's really tricky. I mean, I've heard you speak about this too. Like, your parents are artists and you've talked about how the way that they had, and I think in different careers, like, and maybe it's just being an entrepreneur, but in an internet can, including time, we have to do so many more things than I had to do in the past, but it feels unnatural, or it feels like I can't be really good at anything because I maybe could be, one could be a good agent or a manager or a publicist if you went all in and focused on that, but we're also trying to conceptualize a concept. And in your case, like, it's so impressive, Phoebe, like this book that you just wrote that I'm holding and is so beautiful. The photography is so incredible and all of the food. I really want to like get into the science and in this book, but like you research for all of your books, but you research so much and you really have gone down rabbit holes with, you know, the last book, SIBO, the book before that, with wellness, you know, as a concept and healthy hedonism. And then, you know, with this book, with what do carbs do to you? Where did this come from? Why are we you know, and it's fascinating. And you've done such a great job with the marketing of this book too. I've been like following around. So she did every day for a month, a tip about carbs. What was it?
yeah, about blood sugar, kind of the concept of the book. Well, you know, it depends who's opening it. If you don't care that much about health, it's, you know, just a fun, healthy carb book. I mean, truly, it's cookbook. A cookbook. It's a culinary celebration of carbs. And there aren't really any other books out there that, you know, kind of are organized by type of carb. It's like a chapter on oats, a chapter on rice, you know, a real, it's like a great pantry book in many ways. A rice on noodles, a chapter on noodles, a chapter on potatoes, legumes, corn. But then the first part, and, you know, I think my audience, I've drilled down on over the years, is like particularly nerdy. So like I wanted to make sure that the first part of the book was really about kind of how to build your carb tolerance. So there's so much, I wouldn't say misinformation, but I would say just like demonizing of carbs in the wellness space, especially in the chronic health community. And as someone who's unfortunately been in that community for a while, I just wanted to dispel some of the myths. And then more importantly, some of the myths, you know, aren't myths. You know, there's a reason why low carb and keto have, you know, gained some ground over the last 10 years. It's because, you know, the low fat movement of the 90s was a bit misguided. So, you know, it's not all of this, like carbophobia is not for no good reason. But I think the pendulum has swung way too far to the other side. And it's also gotten really convoluted with the conversation about added sugar, which I think is maybe more of the supervillain of the century than, or sorry, it's definitely more of the supervillain of the century than carbs. Because the reality is, and I get very annoyed by the wellness conversation around carbs because it's such a privileged one. The reality is that the majority of the global population gets the majority of their calories from carbs. And it doesn't necessarily mean that these chronic illnesses are imminent and guaranteed. And they certainly weren't 100 years ago when we had, you know, that same reliance on carbs. So yeah, I really wanted to kind of give people some information about our metabolic health. And then also really marry it with a lot of the stuff that I have learned about gut health. I think unfortunately in the wellness space as well, or in on the internet and pop science, we get so siloed. So actually, I feel like there has been a lot of attention paid to blood sugar recently. It's becoming much more of a hot topic. You know, glucose spikes, people know what that is. I don't think people knew what that was 5 years ago. However, it makes people so myopic and so, you know, rigid about the quote unquote rules or the quote unquote hacks. And in reality, like we really have to like look at the big picture in the long term with our health and marry what we know about metabolic health with what we know about gut health, you know, and not just latch on to one study here and there that proves one thing. That's why, you know, I'm always, I'd probably sell more books if I had more of a silver bullet type outlook, yeah, but same. It's all, you know, like health is so nuanced, it's so individual. And I want to give people the information so they have the toolkit, but then, you know, empower people to have a little bit less food fear in the moment and think in a little bit more broad strokes.
I mean, that's why I've always connected with you. And, you know, obviously we're close friends, but your work, I've always from the jump with your first book talking about healthy hedonism, you know, when you were mentioning rigidity and, you know, that's like that's my MO of like anything. I've steered clear. Like you are the only one allowed to come on the podcast and talk about a book that even like mentions anything that has to do with a diet at all.
I know
you're, you see it the same way I do.
Yeah.
Because I know you and your work, but like anybody else, it just like teeters into eating disorder so quickly. And I have to be so careful of that, not just for my audience, but for myself. And even I can even like hearing you on other podcasts, like I'm like, I don't need to hear all this. I can consume your work because I know it's gentle from you. But even the leading questions that people ask, like I'm so susceptible to it. But I also find it so fascinating and interesting. Like, and what I love about this concept, I've been loving the tips each day because I thought that was I just wanted to say too, like I said this to Serena, our mutual friend, that I I was like, Phoebe's doing such a great job with her book launch. Like, I was like so excited for my tip each day, like a advent calendar. Like, it was really, I really loved it. And I said this to you, I was like, I'm learning so much from you, but I always know that what I'm going to learn isn't going to be restrictive and rigid and, you know, feel like a constraint. It's meant to open up. All this stuff is meant to open up your life and make it better, even if you have to contain, you know, for a period of time, or to you know what works for you, which, like, I really have to do that too. But the book is beautiful. It says right here on the front, I love this book by Ina Garten.
So,
I mean, it's the photography is incredible. I you know, I can't recommend it enough, but I really actually do want to get into some of these concepts, because let's start with the, you were saying there's a reason that keto is around, and, you know, that we talk about the pendulum swings body image wise too. It's like everybody was into body positivity, and then it's like, nope. And then it, you know, it's just going to keep going back and forth. And
lots of rebrands.
Yeah. So when did carbs become villainized? Like, I remember that as a kid, Atkins diet, and I remember my dad.
Yeah, I guess it's always
carbs.
Yeah, there's always been.
But that felt new back then, like in the 90s, maybe?
Yeah, that was running concurrent to the low fat movement. I feel like there is still more shelf space dedicated to low fat than there was to like Atkins in the freezer aisle. But yeah, I mean, it's always been kind of like the sharks and jets, I guess, of the wellness space is like plant-based or keto, low carb. And so, yeah, I don't know. I guess, yeah, Atkins was the first one to really mainstream it. And then I feel like people have, you know, like the paleo movement and like the like kind of more crunchy wellness side of things co-opted that. And so it wasn't just, you know, necessarily like eating your steak and your, you know,
fitness bros.
Yeah, exactly. Fitness bros. But I think no matter what, the problem is that you do end up eating more animal protein in a way that's like not necessarily beneficial for you, beneficial for the planet, or, you know, even a possibility for, again, the global population to eat that way. And again, it's like, I don't think that I'm like not in the paleo mindset that like the agricultural era is like what, you know, set us on this path to, you know, illness.
Wait, say more about that.
Well, I think like the whole paleo movement is like, we shouldn't be eating things that we didn't eat when we were like hunting and gathering. Yeah, exactly. And I'm just like, hashtag not buying it. I think a lot, you know, I obviously do a lot of research, but nutrition science is just a vast area where like, if you seek validation and like only answers from studies, like you're going to be left wanting. So I use a lot of common sense with my approach. You know, there aren't going to be very many studies that validate like multiple hypotheses for obvious reasons. So again, it's like there's the studies on gut health, there's a study on like metabolic health, but you have to like use your common sense and your own outlook and POV and what you know about your body in order to make, you know, the executive decisions that make the most sense for you. So yeah, I think like most things, there's a middle ground to be had. You know, I don't advocate for just like eating crazy amounts of carbs and, you know, and I also am not kind of a purely plant-based person, although I think on the spectrum, I definitely lean that way. But I think most importantly, and what I always try and emphasize to people is that we have such an omission and like restrictive default in our culture. I don't know if it's like just in America, you know, but I do kind of feel like it's mostly kind of an American way of thinking. And the reality is like, again, like nutrition science, like being what it is, like there's actually so much more compelling data about changing other parts of our life to improve our metabolic health, improve our gut health than, you know, taking any one ingredient away on the plate. So particularly for metabolic health, I mean, people again, like kind of fixate on this concept of a glucose spike. And the reality is that our blood sugar goes up and down every time we eat, no matter what. Even if you were on a purely carnivore diet, it would still go up and down because your body is going to find a way to generate that energy that's needed to feed our cells. The issue really becomes when you have too much of a good thing all at once. And that's like, you know, when you have a massive
rise in your blood sugar and your body kind of can't act fast enough to convert it into the storage molecules for later, one of those storage molecules being fat, which is why the low-fat movement is such an irony. I mean, I think I say in the book that it was like really a deal with the devil. You know, if we promise more, if we promise less fat in the package, but the ratio of sugar goes up, we're all but guaranteeing more fat in our bodies as a result, because that excess just has to get converted to fat.
How did no one catch that?
I don't know. It's like really basic biology. It's not like we didn't know, like, this is how the body works.
How did that get through and so mainstream?
Yeah, I don't know. Wonder,
that makes me think, like, is there anything like that now that we're just like,
well, yeah, I mean, it's, I mean, consuming? The, again, like, kind of the super villain of the century is just packaged food. Right. I mean, packaged food brands, big food is going to latch onto whatever marketing concept is, you know, the hot one of the day. And I think that's kind of like the big issue with added sugar too, is that, you know, all these quote unquote healthy brands, paleo, keto, no matter what, it's like a lot of them are just adding tons of sugar, even if it's quote unquote natural sugar, to their foods to make them taste like, you know, the junky childhood packaged foods that we're used to. And maybe keto, it's not necessarily natural sugar. It's like sodium, stevia and monk fruit, or like sugar alcohols. Yeah. But like, unfortunately, those also like are not great for our gut health. Like, I don't know. There's, yeah, it's all problematic. And I'm not saying we all need to like be like milking our own almonds like at every moment of the day and not using packaged foods. Like, as you mentioned, I am a new mom. And so I am relying heavily on a lot of different things. I just think, you know, kind of the conversation around packaged foods, people think one way, like, oh, they mean the like frozen dinners or the boxed macaroni and cheese. And the reality is, like, anything we buy in a package is processed. Pasta is processed.
Right.
And those processes matter. You know, there's kind of different impacts from the way that we've sped up the process of processing over, yeah, the years versus the way that kind of artisans used to make their food 100 years ago.
I think it's so interesting because I, as you know, have a pretty, I don't know if it's strange, but as I'm getting older and I'm seeing more people around me really take an interest in things that I've had an interest in being gut health and the ways that we eat and wellness, if you will, for a decade now or more. But I've had my pendulum swung, as you know, so, yeah, far into it that I had to really let it go to just be, honestly, healthier and more mentally and honestly physically, because I took it to such an extreme. But it's interesting to think about how trends change. You know, we could talk, yeah, about this in relation to marketing and what works to sell a book 10 years ago to now, ugh, or a podcast or whatever, but also these changes in diets or what's trendy in wellness. And like, I remember growing up, I don't even really remember low fat. I guess it was just around, but I remember very clearly.
You didn't eat Snackwell's cookies?
I don't really remember that, but the only thing that stands out for me, I mean, you know, you're talking to a fast food nepo baby.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So like,
yeah,
I am from an Arby's dynasty. Like, I think all that, like, I'm from Michigan. It probably went over my head. There like weren't really any people dieting even around me.
Interesting.
But my dad, because I remember like, it was wild because I think there is something different in men and women, but my dad would like be in a larger body, and he only lived with me when I was, you know, before 10, but he would be in a larger body, and then Atkins, he would say the word Atkins, and then it would be like 2 weeks he would be in a different body.
Oh my gosh.
And he would do that so often. He would cycle, yeah, through it, and he would be back, yeah, and back and back. And my mom, she didn't really try to do that, but if she did, it wouldn't have had the same effect.
Well, that's the other thing, is that women are really different,
right?
And like, truly, these keto and low these keto and low carb approaches, I truly believe, are not meant for women.
Yeah, I saw that myself, and so then I became, you know, I think watching my parents' bodies and just not even my parents' bodies, but just I kind of come. We all do. We all come from seas of eating disorders.
Like, yeah, for sure.
But I was, as you know, was fascinated by it, and then became
vegetarian very young, became vegan.
Right.
After that, became raw vegan, gluten-free. And so many of the – I was having so many aha moments digging into the concepts of this book and your – for the last month, like learning about this – things that are happening in my own gut currently and probably as a result of that. But when I started this podcast, it was like strictly a wellness show, if I'm being honest. And it just was, but I don't really hide that. But it I remember having these conversations with people about like, is it vegan or keto? That conversation was so 10 years ago. It was very much like, is it plant-based or is it – and it wasn't even – the word wasn't paleo or whatever it was.
Yeah. And it wasn't even plant-based. It was vegan or paleo.
Vegan or paleo back then. Yeah, totally. And then it all became more gentle. And it was like, we're in this together. Yeah. And it's like all kind of a mush of cutting things out. But I remember very – very, very – have this like – I was in college and I had cut out so many things that I was – I ate quinoa one night when I hadn't had probably grains. I'd probably cut out grains. And I remember, Phoebe, the next morning feeling like I was on the move. Like I had so much energy because I hadn't had carbs.
Oh my gosh.
I was like probably lacking so much and I felt it so intensely. I was like, this is what it's like to my body to
this
function.
Is your body on carbs. Yeah it's good.
And I had – it was like one of those things that's like it's a memory that I completely had forgotten but came back when I was – diving into the concepts of this.
It's so funny because I'm programmed. I was like, oh God, what happened?
Yeah, like it was going to be a
yeah, yeah, yeah. I was like, you're going to have trouble digesting that. But I'm glad that it wasn't an issue.
I know. No, that wasn't it. And that's the other thing. Like I'm so curious because you talked to Christy Harrison about the effects of eating disorders with
– yeah.
Can you give some of, you know, just what came up even in that conversation or just in general with – how people, when you do go overboard with restricting this stuff and to, or in, you know, the words of your first book, the health to the hedonism ratios off, like how do you manage that in your own mind? And when you talk about this?
Yeah. So I can't remember what exactly we discussed in that conversation,
we'll link
but
to it,
But you know, when you take something out, you kind of lose the enzymes, not forever, but your body just stops making certain enzymes that you need to digest certain things. So I think there's always kind of going to be a transition after a period of restriction. And then there's kind of the overarching issue of the stagnation that can happen in your digestive system. So I cannot remember.
Wait, go back to the enzymes.
Yeah.
So that means like we need enzymes to digest.
And yeah, to
we
digest
haven't
certain
had
things.
Those enzymes, then it's going to be harder to digest something that you haven't eaten for a while.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yes. I cannot drill down on the data for you on that because I haven't looked at it in a long time.
I don't care about data. I'll speak for everyone.
Yeah. And I think so the second part of that, and there were studies on certain eating disorders and SIBO in particular. And SIBO, for those who don't know, it's small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. It's said to, you know, be responsible for a large portion of people with the blanket IBS diagnosis and kind of the large a large percentage of people who deal with SIBO, it's an issue with stagnation in their digestive system. So things just aren't moving through the small intestines as well as they should. There's a lot of food debris left behind. And as a result, it kind of creates an environment where bacteria can colonize too far up the intestinal tract. So our microbiome, is mainly in our large intestine. So when people talk about our good gut critters, they're mostly talking about our large intestinal microbiome. The small intestine is where we absorb our nutrients. So there's really no role for bacteria there because when they're there, they're kind of competing for our food. So I think the issue with eating disorders and SIBO is in particular kind of an issue of stagnation. It can mess with the nerve cells of this wave called the migrating motor complex that kind of street sweeps after a meal and makes sure our food debris moves on its merry way. But then I think like the really kind of like it sounds woo-woo, but it's not. But like stress really messes with the stagnation of our gut. It can mess with our migrating motor complex. And it can mess with so many other things. And there's, you know, a huge relationship between the gut and the brain in allowing us to kind of transition into rest and digest mode versus fight or flight. And it's also such an important thing to keep in mind with blood sugar. And it's why I came up with this line back in the Wellness Project, which is that if you're stressed about what you're eating all the time, no amount of kale will make you healthy.
nothing will make you healthy. And if, again, going back to kind of common sense, if you think about when we're in a stress state, it's a time when our blood sugar is going to be naturally higher because back, you know, not to quote my paleo friends, but back in the day when we were living in the jungle, you know, if there was a threat and our body switched into that mode, it generally meant that we needed more energy in order to flee, in order to have heightened senses, in order, you know, just to be in survival mode. So if you are sitting down to a meal, no matter what you're eating, even if it is, you know, kind of low carb or whatever you think is going to be quote unquote better for your blood sugar, you're going to be entering in with kind of already a heightened blood sugar state and without, you know, an actual emergency where you would use up some of that readily available energy with your muscles by fleeing a tiger or what have you, or running away from some sort of natural disaster, it's just going to stay heightened. And then again, when you add that fuel to your body, go even higher and give your body even more of a job in reducing that spike.
I think something, I was trying to find it to like read you the exact quote, but I can't find it. But you know the artist Marina Abramovich?
Yeah, of course.
So there was a, I will find it eventually, but it was me, it was recently, maybe like last year, there was some New York Times interview with her. Did you happen to read this?
No, I did not.
But the first thing she talks about is how important pooping in the morning
is.
Oh,
well, that is also very important. Yeah.
And I think about that all the time, and I often think about, like, it's sort of this positive feedback loop of, like, when something's off with digestion, you feel off and kind of more stressed, and mm-hmm. then often when one is more stressed and feeling a little bit off, then digestion and poop get a little bit off.
Yep.
No one can make art or be a different decent person when all those processes, you know, so if we really want to go – you know, take this, you know, on another level. Like, I think this is why this stuff is important.
Yeah.
Because nothing feels worse than when you aren't digesting something well. You don't want to be out in the world. You don't want to help other people. You don't want to, like, you want to isolate. It's very difficult to concentrate. And I think a lot of, you know, I think one of the many things that contributed to the worst phases of my eating disorder have been when I've been trying to have a digestion thing improve. And then I've taken it too far because a side effect becomes, oh, well, I guess all my clothes don't fit anymore. Whoopsies.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Or whatever, you know? And I think it's such a slippery slope and it takes the self-honesty, but it's so important to, and that's why I love these tips because there are some just little things. And like I said, like as I'm getting older, I think I sort of threw the baby out with the bathwater with some of this stuff, which was good for me, but I'm really happy to add in some, you know, into my hedonism some, and it never was full hedonism, but, and also just knowing like the little things that I do, like for instance, food sequencing, I was hoping you could talk about, because that was one of the early tips in the early days of the monthly or the daily tip for the last month. And I don't know if you remember this, but you were talking about sugar and when to eat what and on an empty stomach. And you give an example, including cereal, which I'll have you give today. But I was like, okay, so I'm hearing my cereal for dinner habit is good. And you commented back, I don't hate it. So can you get into why you said that?
Okay, so food sequencing is having a moment. New York Times, well, just did kind of a little piece on it to see if like the internet is right, if this is like legit science, and it is. So the idea is that the order in which we eat our macronutrients or certain foods can really help the way that we metabolize, well, really anything into glucose. So the ideal is to start with fiber and then protein or fat, and then to kind of have your carbs or your sugars towards the end, because anything that's in the tank already is going to slow down the progression to your bloodstream. So I say that the book is slow carb, not low carb, because again, it's a celebration of carbs, but the tips are just teaching you how not to have too much of a good thing all at once. And I'm not talking about like too much of a good food all at once. I'm talking about too much glucose in your bloodstream all at once, because you want, you know, carbs. Again, you need carbs for energy. We need all our foods for energy. And, you know, there are extreme athletes who like do need to eat tons of carbs, who need to eat tons of sugar. Like, we all have different lifestyles and need to choose our different carb adventures. But I'll describe one of the videos that I did as a visual aid. Hopefully the audio version of that will make sense, because I think it's so important to think about. But, you know, if you drink pure sugar on an empty stomach, so let's say apple juice, which has all of the fiber removed, think of your small intestine like a fine mesh sieve. So you pour that apple juice through, it's going to go unobstructed straight into your bloodstream. It can reach your bloodstream within 5 minutes. But if you were to eat the whole apple, you know, you're still getting it through that fine mesh sieve. You're going to chew and chew and chew. You're going to get it to be this kind of, you know, sludge. But all of that fiber, all of that sludge is going to kind of coat the fine mesh sieve. I have a recipe in the book, a dessert recipe for a raspberry curd tart. And if you make it, you will see it, you know, firsthand, that when you muddle those raspberries through the fine mesh sieve, it creates like kind of a literal barrier for whatever comes next. And, you know, whether it's the juice from the apple or anything that comes after, a mashed potato, what have you, it's going to enter bloodstream at more of a drip, drip, moderate clip than that unobstructed stream. So the fiber is protective in that way by creating that literal seal. And then fat and protein kind of just slow down the whole digestive process, gastric emptying, which is just a fancy way of saying it slows down, you know, the process of your stomach releasing food into your small intestine where it gets absorbed. And then carbs, you know, can be metabolized fairly quickly if there's no fiber present. So really, it's not actually rocket science. Like, if you want to, you know, have your carbs cause less problems, less side effects, less chaos in the body, all you need to do is add more fiber, which means all you need to do is add more plants, more vegetables, more seeds, more nuts, really anything that you tolerate and enjoy.
Okay, here are a couple questions I have for this. So when you're talking about that apple juice on an empty stomach, that makes so much sense for me. Often, you know, we go to dinner. This could be you and me. We get a glass of wine. You drink that on an empty stomach mm-hmm. before the appetizers come. Is it the same thing?
The wine is actually not a big deal. It's like a sugary cocktail. Or eating, you know, bread from the bread basket. I'd say like—
Why is the wine not a big deal? Because it's fermented?
Yeah, it doesn't have like actually a huge sugar content at the end of the day. Although I think, you know, some like cheapo, like if your Franzia probably has added sugar in it. But yeah, the sugar's fermented, so it's not kind of going to have as big of an impact on your blood sugar. Caffeine actually, ironically, does have more of an effect on your blood sugar.
Right,
what we're doing right now on an empty stomach, jacking ourselves up. And that's because of, you know, the relationship with cortisol and adrenaline and all of our stress hormones.
Have a couple almonds before you. Coffee.
But I love it. It's like, you know, the peanuts on a bar. You don't see that so much anymore. But in the olden days, you know, you could grab some peanuts off the bar and just like offset whatever you have afterwards. A beer, because it's like kind of a high carb beverage, would fall in the category of like kind of a blood sugar, not ideal beverage. But again, it's like you do not have to omit anything. Just change the way you eat things. Yeah. Like, it's all in the how. And that's a harder thing to kind of teach people. It's a harder thing to describe. But it's kind of why, you know, I get into like the granular differences between like a slow dried pasta and like an industrially made pasta. And it's not to make you neurotic about like, you know, shopping at the farmer's market for every single ingredient. I hope it's more empowering that it is actually not the what. Like, you can have all of these things if you want incremental improvements, if you want to like not go back to the paleo era, but like go back 100 years. Yeah. It's really just about how things are made and how you eat them.
Yeah, I think as someone who I'm one of these people, like you were saying, in this country at least, or like with and, you know, you made the joke, like, I'd sell more books if I had, mm-hmm. if I think dichotomous thinking is so
I make that joke every book, sell. By the way.
Yeah. but it's true. Like someone said that to me, even with like my workshop about creativity, as you know, that you were a guest in. And it wasn't, you know, the first time I did it, it was COVID. And so everyone's like, yes, we want to do this Zoom thing. And then where we all work together and make our projects together and have collaboration and connection and friendship. And it's really, you know, and then the third time I launched it, it was like, okay,
we're all sick of Zoom. Yeah, exactly. Goodbye.
And I was talking to a friend about it. And I was like, how do I get out? It was a marketing issue. And she was like, listen, it's a lot. You're selling like gentleness, friendship, collaboration, creativity. A much easier sell is like people who talk about weight loss,
manifest productivity,
find your dream partner, product,
write like 5,000 words in a week,
drop 80 pounds. Like all that stuff's really sexy and really easy to market. And what I think I love about your work and relate to is like, it's somewhere in the middle. It's gentleness. It's, you know, finding it. And that is a trickier thing to say in a soundbite. And it's trickier to do, honestly.
It is. It is.
It's easier. I want someone to just tell me, stop doing this thing. Do this one thing. Silver bullet. Take this pill. Like that's much. We wish it was that, but it's not. And I think the simple, like I heard Jamie Oliver on a podcast earlier this year.
I love him.
Yeah. And he was so funny. And he said, it was a really like fun episode. And he was like, the one thing that I would tell people to do is just eat a bunch of different things, like diversify.
Exactly.
What you're
eating. That is the number one health tip. Saying, that is, and that is why omission is such a problem, because no matter what, you're going to be reducing the number of plants on your plate. Like even just in that mindset, like if you can't order certain things at a restaurant, like you are just going to be making your world that much smaller, making your plate that much smaller and filling it with, you know, kind of more of the same thing.
I found that so comforting. Well, at first I was like, when I heard that, because I eat kind of the same few things over and over and over again. Like truly, I'll have the same salad every night. And I heard that and I was like, I feel exposed. But then then when I do diversify or I do go out to dinner or whatever, and I'm eating something that's just like, you know, maybe a wellness person wouldn't say it's ideal or whatever, I'm like, diversity in the enzymes, diversity. Like it all makes it good. And I think if you can reframe the way that we're thinking about things, and another tip for this that I liked from you is related to stay in the sequencing thing, you know. And I think what you were saying about the cereal is that like when you wake up in the morning, you haven't eaten for a long period of time.
Yes, yes. And so there's nothing in the tank, truly nothing.
Right.
Especially if you're pooping.
Yeah. Can you explain that a little bit about like how in this country there's, you know, muffins are essentially... Yeah.
But again, it's like the packaged food industry is winning. Like we have somehow managed to like demonize dessert, but like all of the breakfast foods that come in a package are dessert. Like they all have. I did a reel at Whole Foods looking at all the healthy brands and like comparing granola and oatmeal and like muffin mix to like brownies and cupcakes and I don't even know what else. And yeah, like legitimate, like candy, like comparing energy bars to candy bars. And like they all have the same sugar content. Yeah. Truly, some of the breakfast foods have even more. Yeah. It's wild. And so, I don't know why that has reframed for us. And truly, if you love eating those sweet things for breakfast, I mean, more power to you. I just think, you know, for me, it's all about conscious pleasure. Pleasure is like such a dirty word that no one talks about in the wellness world, and releasing like some of the guilt and shame. So I hope, you know, if you're someone who loves cookies and muffins and cupcakes, all you have to do, if you also love, you know, avocado toast and omelets and scrambled eggs, is, you know, shift some of those treats into a thing that actually feels like a treat. Yeah. You know, buying quote unquote healthy granola, buying like quote unquote healthy cereal, like is that bringing you more pleasure than having a cookie after a meal? I don't know. Everyone has to make that choice for themselves. And my philosophy is very much about adding instead of taking away and just being a little bit more intentional and also being just more aware about the kind of the myths that we've been sold about, you know, certain categories of food. So in particular, you know, I think breakfast, we could rebrand that a little bit and just find things that, you know, have a little bit more fiber, have a little bit more protein, have a little bit more fat, and have a little bit less sugar. But if you do it at the end of the day, like don't stress about it. Think about ways you can add instead of take away. So if you love your sugary cereal, fantastic. Like, can we add some hemp seeds to it? Can we add, you know, I don't know. I don't know what cereal. I don't eat cereal that often. But yeah, what can we do? Can we maybe have, you know, a spoonful of peanut butter or almond butter before we eat our cereal?
Yeah.
Before we eat our cereal, kind of almost as like a delicious, you know, breakfast supplement of sorts. It's all just about finding new ways forward. I have a whole chapter in the book. It's the only chapter that is not carb-based recipes, and I call them carb companions. And it's a similar concept as the food sequencing. But, you know, a similar idea is to just add more fiber to the plate, more fiber to your meals. And that, again, will also slow your carbs roll. So I have a whole bunch of nut crunches and seed sprinkles that truly make every dish more delicious. I mean, it's adding texture, it's adding some spices, it's, you know, adding kind of that buttery, fatty deliciousness. Seeds and nuts, by the way, you know, are such an important source of fat, fiber, and protein all in one tiny little package. But the truth is like, these things, I would recommend anyone who doesn't think about health to just make and add to their meals because it's delicious.
Yeah, I want to mention something that is I should have led with. Your book, SIBO Made Simple, is the what it has recipes in it too.
Yeah.
And this one and when I and the Wellness Project.
Well, the Wellness Project has like two recipes at the end of each chapter. Yeah. Yes.
When I first moved to New York, you invited me to a dinner that you were hosting. And I have been to your house for dinner and your food and the way that you cook of anyone that I like for some reason for like what you are an incredible, maybe we just have a similar palate. I don't know, but I just love what you said about the seat. Like I love that so much. And the carb companions, I want to like reiterate a point that I learned from my favorite person to learn from on the internet who's sitting across from me that you said on the internet, I don't know if you said here, is like some of these salads and these carb companions can be, you eat before a meal.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And one of the examples that you gave, and again, like as someone who I like to know there's a study, but I don't actually care about the data. If someone I know, like my friends Zoe would always be like, you could so easily join a cult because if you trust someone, I just rather you tell me. I'm like, I don't need to read the study. Yeah. I trust you. You're not going to, you know, and that's how I feel about this. But some of these anecdotes about what people have been doing across the world for such a long period of time and just figured out works for them. And you gave the example talking about the carb companions about how in Japanese cuisine they eat edamame before meals, and that helps with the absorption of the white rice, right? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, well, slowing down the absorption of the white rice. Antipasti in Italian culture, you know, grilled vegetables, even, you know, sometimes it's cured meats are the primi, are the antipasti, the first course, and then comes the primi, which is the pasta. All of that is kind of baked into certain cultures and why, you know, ancient cultures knew what they were doing and like didn't have as much disease. But even, you know, I was just in San Francisco for a book tour and I went to have a beautiful sushi lunch and it wasn't edamame they brought me, but they brought me this little cucumber salad. And you know, it's kind of baked into certain cultures that is what is done. And I don't know that they know why they're doing it necessarily. Again, they didn't have the studies back then, but it was just intuitive.
I was trying to think in Greek, because I know you love Mediterranean food.
Yeah.
I guess it's like, the salads, all the salads.
Yeah. And I borrow like from a lot of cultures in the book. Cause I think the Mediterranean diet has become the most well-known of the Mediterranean diet as a region has come to encompass this idea of, you know, limited animal protein, healthy fats, lots of vegetables, whole grains. But there are so many other countries and cultures that do that exact same thing. Yeah. In the corn chapter, obviously I use a lot of Central and South American influences. And there's just a lot of, if we look, you know, to again, how people were eating 100 years ago, the combination of corn and beans, of legumes, like again, that's kind of this amazing carb companion. They're actually both carbs, but you get like such a great combination of different of different amino acids. And I don't know. I try not to like have like a really granular, like I'm a chef and I come at it from the culinary yeah. perspective more than anything. But I think I have just like a deep trust in cultural histories and medicine, food is medicine from different places around the world, and just trusting those traditions.
Yeah. And I think when, you know, going back to, as someone who feels like I could have, especially 10 years ago, I would spending all my time reading every nutrition book and listening to every podcast. And there was so much conflicting information. And I'm reminded of, I was kind of brought back to that because, you know, to go back to my cereal comment I left you, like you were saying, having a sugary breakfast on an empty stomach, even if you don't eat until lunch, you know, yeah. just as the first meal,
yeah,
it's better to have it later. And what was so interesting about that is I was thinking back to things that I had heard in food sequencing. One of the biggest things that I stuck with early on when I first got down the rabbit hole with wellness was the exact opposite. Like I was always under the impression, I read this book that was like, eat your fruit first, it digests quickly, then you don't want to put it, because I remember the analogy, I can see the book and I can see the analogy.
Oh my God,
I know what the book is. I won't say it, but I'll tell you. But it's it's like putting a Ferrari behind a semi truck. You want to have the Ferrari go first.
Oh my God.
See what I'm saying? Like yeah. You eat the apple. And so I was militant about that to the point where even my mom like still talks about it. Like I still have that mindset. And also I feel more balanced and energized when I like not balanced, like a, I feel like food's doing what it's meant to do when I have a carb and a protein and a fat together. But I really was on, and it wasn't called food sequencing, it was called food combining. But I was really on one with that for so long that it's still hard for me to like improperly in quotes, combine food because it's so in me. But like to this morning, I'll give you, you can tell me what you think of this. I was really hungry when I woke up. And I had a bunch of blueberries on an empty stomach. And then I had a packet of like camping style oatmeal, unflavored, or just oats in the package, but like packaged separate. But like, and then I was thinking about, because I knew we were doing this, and I was like, oh, that's a, and now I'm drinking caffeine tea. Like,
but no, but like your blueberries have fiber in them. So that's like, that's, of the choices, like it's a totally fine way to do things.
Would have been better with a scoop of almond butter.
Yeah. I mean, anytime you can, again, add more fiber, more healthy fat, more protein, you know, great. But I don't know. It's like, don't obsess about it. Yeah. No one should obsess about any of these things.
You see how my brain works.
Yeah.
Even a tiny bit of it. And I'm
no,
like,
but your brain works like a lot of people's brains.
Yeah.
And it's really hard. You know, it's something I struggle with because I want to give people this information, but I really don't want anyone to be rigid about it. I want it to just like be a seed of something in the back of your head. It's funny. People ask me about food combining all the time. And I'm like, you know, if it works for you, fantastic. But I think it's a really hard diet philosophy for people to apply. Like, I don't know. I think, again, it like really forces you to not order certain things on a restaurant menu. Like, I think it just breeds a lot of restriction.
I think it was the stickiest thing for my eating disorder.
Yeah.
I think it was the number of all of my raw, vegan, gluten-free, sugar. I think that food combining thing stuck me into – this was after anorexia. This isn't my orthorexic phase, but I think that was the number one thing. I'm not a eating disorder clinician, obviously, but I think that one was one of the stickier ones for your brain because you really learn it and get into it and you can't like – and it's connected to digestion in a way.
Yeah.
So that one was pretty wild.
And I would encourage people not like, please don't let the concept of food sequencing take that place.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not worth it.
Yeah. It's different enough. It's like actually the opposite.
Yeah.
It's comforting in a way because it almost disproves food combining because the concepts are different.
Yeah. But then it's like you can apply the lessons of food sequencing as a combination, which is like, that's why I say it's like a carb companion. When you add the fiber, fat, and protein just to your meal, you're not eating it first, but like you can also benefit from just adding it to your meal. So I don't know. Again, I would say the number one tip for both, you know, where blood sugar and
gut health overlap is diversity. And as part of diversity, it's really just to add as much fiber, as many plants as possible.
Yeah, I really, and then the other thing too, that you really talk about is like moving after meals, and sleep has a huge effect on this, and it's kind of
a positive feedback
loop. And, you know, eating meals and not snacks and like just all these things, like they all contribute to each other, and they're all, and it's all connected, and it's just
And that's the thing too, is like if you have an obsessive mindset, if you're prone to eating disorders, like ignore every single thing I say associated with food. And there's always going to be another in. Yeah. That's the thing with wellness, is that you can always find some sort of in. You don't have to do all of the above all at once. Just focus on sleep. Just focus on stress management. Just focus on movement to like in a healthy, to a healthy degree. And I say not exercise. I say just movement, just moving more throughout the day.
What are your thoughts on wellness, well-being, that word? Like, is I love the way that you think about it.
Just like because, cynically.
Yeah, like because it's so funny. I think when we met, like we came from, we have the same perspective on this, but we came from such, it's kind of like what you're saying about me in New York at the same time, where it was like, you to me were so cool because you were like, you come from the food world and you are a chef, and Serena too. And I'm like, I used to be all wellness, and you had to like, you were cool in food and had to add some wellness in because you had to. Because
I had to.
Reluctantly.
Yeah.
Where I,
very reluctantly.
Where I reluctantly had to add in hedonism.
Yeah.
But we got to the same spot.
Yeah. It's, you know, so funny. I mean? Yeah, absolutely.
So where are you with it now too? Because like, I mean, now like we're getting older, things are moving differently, we're trying to, you know, where do you think it's going? How are you feeling about your role, like related to, and you have so many different projects, but like, you know, you're involved in it in some way.
Yeah, I mean, I think as I get older, and it's ironic that I'm going to say this, because you know, when you have a one-year-old that first year, it's not necessarily like hashtag goals, but like I feel like I've become much more aware of how the other avenues of, you know, things of lifestyle factors besides food that actually impact my wellness to such a larger degree. And sleep is definitely one of them. I also now know from the past year that I can survive without, you know, with less of it. It's not like the end all be all, but I think it has a real substantive impact for me. And it has a substantive impact for, you know, my carb tolerance. Like I notice like being edgier, you know, after drinking caffeine on an empty stomach, or being edgier after like eating, you know, a not quote unquote clean diet that day, or I don't know. It's just, it things, and by not clean diet, I mean mostly just, I mean eating more sugar than usual, because like I don't really believe that anything is like unclean. So yeah, I think where I'm at today is really honestly not that different than after the wellness project. Like I think the wellness project more than anything was a mindset project of how I feel about my wellness, how I feel about my health. And it is very much like that toolkit mentality, that everything is going to change on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis. I'm going to go through different phases. The toolkit is always in my back pocket to reach for different things depending on the constraints, or again, how the healthy hedonism scales change. Like exercise and I have always kind of had, I don't know, more of a troubled approach. Like it was definitely not top of my list during the wellness project or after. But this year, with a one-year-old not getting as much sleep as usual, I think because it's something I can schedule, I have been, you know, getting in some more or less formal form of exercise, but just some walking sometimes, like getting a little bit in every day has been so important for me. And I value it in a way that I never did before. Or maybe I did, you know, in different parts of my life, but not in my mid to late 20s.
Yeah, I think, gosh, I mean, I want to go back to just the one other thing about you mentioned like you had a little more sugar than you usually do or whatever. Like, gentleness after that happens, or like non-judgment, I think, is really the most important thing. And I want to this is kind of going back to like the granular parts of your book, but this is so important. I meant to say earlier, because I have several people in my life who are very militant about no sugar, and they are allergic to sugar. And I always say that, aren't we all? I would love if you could.
Oh my God, that is talk such about, BS. Sorry.
Can you just talk about the penny I'm putting in your jukebox?
Yeah. No, I mean, all natural sugar, once it gets to your bloodstream, is the same thing. It's some combination of glucose.
All sugar doesn't do anything to your bloodstream.
Well, no. So like fructose, I guess, is the molecule that has a different impact because it's just metabolized slightly differently.
So what's that?
Fructose is metabolized solely by your liver. So it's all fruit sugar. So sucrose is table sugar. Again, the most demonized. But sucrose is really just 50-50 glucose and fructose. And sometimes it depends on the type of honey. It depends on, you know, the type of natural sweetener. But like agave has more fructose by a lot, percentage-wise, than table sugar. But because it's quote-unquote natural.
Yeah, I always avoid
I keep putting air quotes on everything today. But because it's natural, people, you know, think it's like better for them. Yeah. And it's not. It's all the same thing at the end of the day. But if you were to parse through the options, the higher the fructose, you know, the harder it's going to be on your body. And that's like kind of a general rule of thumb. Like anything savory, any carbs are going to be a better choice than anything with tons of fructose in it. So anything sweet, just for your blood sugar and your metabolism. Because again, like your liver just has a little bit less of a heavy load. But again, yeah, I think the lesson there is just not to like, again, get so bogged down in the what, and just maybe like reduce the quantity a little bit, or again, don't, and just employ one of the other tactics.
Yeah, I think it's just, it makes me sad. So basically, I'm hearing, is this correct? Like pretty much all sugar affects us the same, and it doesn't really matter the kind.
No, it's like on a molecular level, like
sugar is sugar.
Yeah. It's not if it's derived from a natural source. It's like, is it sucrose? Is it glucose? Is it fructose?
Much.
Yeah. And then really how the much? Issue. Yeah.
Because that's funny.
It's excess. It's always excess. That's the issue. It's not, you can have all of these things in moderation, you know, in the wild. You could, you know, it's like berries were an amazing source of energy, but it didn't enter our bloodstream as quickly because there was fiber built in. So yeah, it's really just about kind of recreating that ratio and not, you know, no one in the wild would eat 3 mangoes. We sit down and we eat like an entire bag of dried mangoes, which is like probably like 5 mangoes in like, you know, 30 minute sitting. That's where like packaged food, gets in our head, because the package will say pure only mango, nothing added. Right. Like, you know, it's whole fruit, but it's very different. It's whole fruit, but all the water's removed. And it's given to us in a really convenient way that will allow us to eat it that much faster. And again, have that much more of an excess.
Totally. And I'm a like volume eater. Like I like eating a lot, and I also like to grate. Like I don't know. And so those things that kind of get me. But I also, when you were doing the whole, I meant to bring this sugar piece up when you were talking about the going around Whole Foods and looking at stuff like that, because it reminded me of my grandfather, because as you know, I used to work for a healthy snack company that we love. And
that we love. Yep.
We can say it. It's Kind.
Yeah.
And they're actually very good with their this exact thing, which is stuff. But funnily enough, and gotten, you know, better over the, it was 10 years ago when I worked for them. But my grandfather.
And offer savory options too, which I think is great.
Not sponsored, but open to it.
Open.
They used to sponsor this my whole, they're still sponsoring my whole life. Living off my savings from when I worked for them. But anyway, the point is my grandfather would put them in his golf bag and when he was alive, and he'd be like, my granddaughter works for a candy bar company.
Oh my God, funny.
But the funniest thing was like, he was a little bit wrong on them, but like mostly in that aisle, he's right.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's just, it's so funny.
The candy bar company.
I know. Yeah. It's so funny. How the candy bars going? My granddaughter sells candy bars. That's what he would always say.
That is so cute. I love that.
I'm just like, he actually did the podcast.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Cute.
Yeah. But okay, gosh, there's a million more things I want to ask you and talk about, but let's just do a couple rapid fires.
Okay, cool.
What's your favorite recipe from the book? And then I'll tell you mine.
Okay, so this is like not an everyday. I'll give you one that's like more of a hedonism dish, although it's like perfectly healthy too, but it's more of like a special occasion when I'm just like really proud of the creativity behind it. And that is the crab cake baked potatoes. Because it combines, I do a lot of mashups in this book, like combining two of my favorite comfort foods into one. But it's essentially kind of hollowed out potatoes. But then instead of adding a ton of breadcrumbs to make a crab cake, you add a little bit of the potato into the crab mixture. And then you scoop it into like a heaping pile onto the baked potatoes, maybe put like a little breadcrumbs on top to get that crispiness, and then rebake them for just like a small amount of time to warm it through. And it's just like a crab cake sitting in a baked potato. I mean, like, who could argue with that?
Oh my God. Yeah. That's so good.
And then more of like an everyday dinner. Oh, well, there's a Moroccan chicken and rice casserole that I think is probably the most popular dish in the book thus far. And I think it's for good reason. I predicted it probably was going to be, but it's also one of my favorite to make. I really love the art of the chicken and rice casserole because it's, you know, so retro and so comforting, but most importantly, so easy. Like literally all you have to do is mix things together in a bowl and put it in the dish and then bake it. And it bakes for like 45 minutes, but it's like all in active time. And essentially this one, I make a lot of them on my site.
We love inactive time.
And yeah. Cooking. Call them CRCs. And you get a really good, beautiful flavor for profile in this one. It's got some chickpeas mixed in, carb companions. It's got some slivered carrots, some almonds on top, and then turmeric, like really delicious spices. And then a little bit, we have some chopped dates too, because Moroccan cooking like has a lot of dried fruit in it. And there's nothing wrong with that. Again, I brought up dried fruit a second ago, but I like to make sure that, you know, it's with a lot of other like delicious plants, like fibrous things. So yeah, the sweet and the sour.
I love
the carby and the fibery.
I want to call out one other thing from, as you know, I am not a cook, only with 3 years. So the easier, the better. And one thing, I don't know if you mentioned it on this, that is a tip for carbs and also for quicker cooking. Yeah. So it's
one of my favorite tips.
This is you and me.
Yeah.
This is you and me and a tip.
Yeah. It's to not peel your vegetables. That's what you're going to say, right? Yeah. So I feel like, you know, when we talk about like, I don't know, I'm like complaining about packaged foods and whatnot. People are like, oh my God, convenience. I'm going to have to like spend so much more time in the kitchen. There are a few tips like this one that will save you time also. And yeah, there's just no reason to peel your potatoes or your carrots, you know, unless you're making like a silky smooth, like potato puree type mashed potato. Like otherwise, I mean, there's very few other scenarios in which I don't leave the skins on.
Yeah.
And there's always going to be much more fiber in the skins than in the fleshy centers. If you want to think about like vegetables that are higher fiber, I mean, first of all, like you can't go wrong with vegetables, just like eat any vegetable, but it's like the stalks and the woody pieces. So like don't throw out your broccoli stalks, your stems, like that's going to have a ton more fiber than the florets, for instance. And then, yeah, again, with the peels of anything, and you know, there's some things that you don't want to eat the peels of, like butternut squash. I don't know. It's just like a little toothsome, but yeah, anything that is actually edible, then yeah, just leave it on. It saves you so much time.
I love the skin of fish. I love
me too. Yeah.
Like we, yeah. I always forget. We do a very similar palette.
Yeah.
I've noticed that about us. The turmeric pumpkin fall reset soup is the one that I've starred for myself. And I got to say, this strawberry polenta cake.
Oh, it's so good.
It is. I'm sure it is incredible and I definitely want to make it, but I'll go ahead and I'll say it. Best photo in the book for sure. It's so beautiful.
You're going to get to eat that one at the party.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
I'm going to have that at the party.
Oh, incredible. Gosh, I love you so much. There's a million other questions that I want to ask, but maybe just, is there anything you want to leave people with? Anything that you've been contemplating or learning or anything that you know, we didn't talk about you becoming a mom at all. We didn't talk about like, anything other than the book, really, which is so surprising for us.
Well, but yeah,
you'll be back a million times.
Yeah, I didn't mean to, like, you know.
No, I forced us to because really wanted to.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot.
Anyway, I've been signing the book, Eat Your Veggies and Your Carbs. And that's kind of the motto. Just eat your veggies and your carbs.
I think
eat your carbs and your veggies, whichever like way you fall on the scale in terms of weighing those two different things on your plate.
I really loved that. And I really loved this conversation because I think I haven't done this show started as a wellness show, as I said, and it really, again, like mirrors what I was saying about the healthy hedonism. I feel like we really got somewhere between me and me today with like, you had hedonism and had to add health. I had health and had to add in hedonism. And that's what I did with this podcast. It was all wellness and I really went away from it. And we're due for one like this because I haven't really talked about this stuff and, you know, just eating and wellness and how we feel. And also like I've been getting anything that makes you like forces you to pay attention to your body. I've been getting like, I call it bubble guts. Mm. And maybe who knows, but it's every once in a while you burp and you taste your food again.
Yeah.
And I know exactly what I kind of have you in my brain. And I'm like, I know things to avoid that make that happen. Mm-hmm. And you just find your patterning as you grow up of like, this I don't digest well, this I like, this I don't. And you kind of, but I've noticed that I get really afraid to branch out because I don't want to have that feeling again. And so this was a really illuminating conversation of like, branch out. If that happens, do that. Like it.
So here's another, like, I don't know. I'm not saying that this is the cause or going to have any effect on you. But again, there are other ends than just changing the what. Wear looser pants, Katie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you're a high-waisted girly. It does not help.
Yeah. I think that is a huge thing. I noticed it the other day. I was wearing like a, yes, when anytime anything pushes on there.
I have one pair of pants that I don't wear anymore. They're like kind of like skinny jeans, super tight. And I was like having these like, I mean, not even bubble guts like plus diarrhea, like these like real like episodes. And I truly like honed in on the fact that it was like, actually, it's every time I wear these pants, there's no commonality other than these pants. And I think I'm going to just retire them.
Yeah. Not juice is not worth the squeeze, no matter how cute the pants are. This is a delight. I love you so much. I want to talk about, you're just going to have to come back.
Great. For a fourth time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fourth time.
I rounded it up at the beginning.
All right. Anything else? You feel good? You feel like we got it?
Yeah. No. I mean, go check out Carbivore. Unfortunately, we are running into some autocorrect issues when you search for it. So just go to carbivorecookbook.com if you want to find the links. And I also have like if you are excited about the kind of like one tip a day
idea,
then you can download my blood sugar bootcamp, which is just like a little email a day in your inbox. So anyone who buys the book launch month, I mean, we're still firmly in there. I'll probably keep it going for a little longer, but just go to that site and you can enter your order receipt and get that for free.
And we'll have all these links in the show notes. And Phoebe's one of my best friends, and I'm just so grateful that I got to share this with everyone. And
I'm grateful. This is so fun.
Mwah. Okay, we do the deep breath. Inhale. Let it out.
It feels nice.
Okay, that was my episode with my dear friend Phoebe Lapine. Thank you so much for listening all the way to the end. It means more than you know. If you like this episode, please share it on however you want to. Text it to a friend. Email it to a friend, tell a friend about it, blast it from your speakers on your car, or you can post about it on Instagram. And if you do there, tag Let It Out, this podcast's Instagram. It's also me, at Let It Out with 3 T's. But also tag me at Katie Dillett, because I'm really sorry because, listen, I haven't been going on that account. I haven't been posting on the feed because I have this whole thing I want to post on the feed. I'm just going to let you behind the curtain. This is what's going on. I am making something that is in process, but I like did it a bit backwards where I figured out the marketing, not marketing, but like the visuals of it, of like what I want to post on Instagram telling about it. And I plan that all out, like a grid of these, like, just what I want to look like. And I can't post about episodes until I post that, because I already started posting that. It has to do with mouths. It's so complex and, like, it doesn't really even make sense. But I've committed and I just want to see it through. Just stay with me. I mean, who knows? But the point is, I haven't been going on that account. But then when I do go on every once in a while, I check in, I'll miss all of these stories that were shared of you listening to the podcast. And I want to repost them. And so I'm so sorry if you have posted them. Thank you so much. It like, truly, I just want to be able to keep doing this. So it makes
a huge difference actually when you share, and I want to be able to reshare it so more people see it. So tag me at Katie Dibble, because I go on that one every single day pretty much, and I am just so grateful. You can also leave a review. You can also do nothing, and this is a free podcast, so I just so appreciate you. And if you want to keep in touch with me more, and if you like this podcast or you like my work, you'll probably like our Substack, the Let It Out letter. And if you don't like this podcast, you're not going to like that at all. So steer clear. But I just sent out a new one, and there's going to be one coming out next week. And I took a long break by accident. I had a bunch come up and was out of town. And it's a long story, but I love you. I'm so grateful that you're listening. And let me know what's new with you. You good? Your car's running okay, and you're going on walks still? That's good. You know, it's gonna be the summer pretty soon. How are the kids? How's your back feeling? Let me know. Okay, this podcast is edited by Brianna Bain, and I will talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Oh, and if you want to work with me one-on-one, I just had two spots open up in the creative clinic, the creative consulting clinic. So if you don't know what that is, the link is in the show notes to find out if you're curious. And if not, I'll see you here. Same time, same place. Bye-bye.